All right, guys, happy Friday. Salute to the NBA community and welcome back to the Best of Seven Sports Talk, man. Seven Mitchell is in the building, man. Big up to the community. The NBA trade deadline is now over. So many storylines and narratives to talk about. Today, I am joined with a special guest, man. I invited this gentleman on my platform. He's a sports journalist, content creator for sports, also a producer, man. He has wear many hats. The Daddy Mac of this thing, man. I got Nick Mac in the building. Nick, appreciate you for joining me today, fam.
Thanks for having me, Seven. I'm excited about it, man.
So here we go, Nick. I brought you on, bro, because your story is interesting. And I follow you on social media and, you know, I watch your grind and I watch your consistency. So I wanted to bring you on to my platform because I wanted to start to interact and interview some personalities in the world of sports that, you know, have individual stories or just hustling and grinding to get and you know, create things and opportunity for themselves and people around them. So definitely thanks once again for joining the show today.
Absolutely, man. And I really appreciate you taking note of what I'm doing and how hard I'm working. That means a lot.
Absolutely, bro. So let's go back, Nick. Are you from New York?
I'm originally, born and raised on the east end of Long Island, New York.
Now, this is kind of crazy because they definitely go kind of intertwined, but how did sports come into play in your household growing up with you and NY? Were you in a family sports oriented type of household, or how did sports come into play?
Oh, yeah, man. My dad was my basketball coach from when I was 5 years old up until, you know, I got into high school. And, and I just grew up in the game. My older brother played, I played. We were traveling a lot for tournaments. We were going into New York City, you know, in the inner cities. And, you know, that's where we were practicing and doing tournaments. And even if I wasn't playing, I was traveling with my brother's team and vice versa. So we were always going, you know, traveling for 3-point competitions, free throw competitions. So basketball has been in my life forever. And I, you know, even at home, my dad's sitting there showing me VHS tapes of Pistol Pete, Magic Johnson, Hal Greer, Dave Bing, guys all the way back, Bob Cousy even, you know, okay. So, you know, it just sports. And then even other sports, boxing's been in my family for a long time. Me and my older brother were both Golden Gloves boxers and, you know, all sports, baseball, football, we gather around the TV to watch whatever, but basketball was the most prominent.
Yeah, this thing right here we love, man. That thing we love called basketball. So
yes, sir.
What was it, bro? You know what I mean? Even at an early age of five, that attracted you the most about hoops versus all the other sports that was out there?
I just think it was the competition, man. Where we were going and we were traveling to play games, it was the ultimate competition. You know, right. Back then, there was no social media, nothing like that. It was just 5-on-5, you know, mano a mano kind of type stuff. So I think that's what attracted me at first because it really got intense, especially the courts we were playing on. So, you know, that, and I just love the game, man. I love every aspect of the game. It's a beautiful art form, in my opinion. There's a lot of poetry. It's very poetic. So that's pretty much it. Like the flow of the game.
What was the level of competition like in the household between you and your brother back then, back in the day?
Man, well, me and my brother would go at it with everything. We were sparring partners with the boxing and, you know, we would always challenge each other in the driveways one-on-one or, you know, when we had a court in my backyard one-on-one. But, you know, as he got older and went on to college, you know, that's when I started, you know, messing with my buddies. But the level of competition between us, it was always, it got heated, it got intense, but it would always boil down to love. It was all out of love. He pushed me, I pushed him.
That's dope, man. We got Nick Mac in the building, guys. So, Nick, you talked about, you know, playing organized basketball, things of that nature coming up in school. Where did the transition come in when we talk about being more of an analyst or taking a different realm of position when we talk about sports?
So, I ran into trouble in the high school, man. I got involved in some bad stuff, and then I actually quit the basketball team to pursue boxing, and that's when I entered the Golden Gloves my senior year of high school. Also, I was probably the shortest dude on the team. I'll admit it right now, man. I'm 5'8", so I'm short as hell. So me trying to, you know, find my way on a squad like that, you know, you can get away with it in middle school. You can get away with it on JV, but you can't get away with it on varsity. You know what I'm saying?
That's a fact.
So right around then, I decided to do some boxing, but I ended up hurting myself and needing 3 months of recovery time. Couldn't box, couldn't do anything. So right around then, I ran into some really bad trouble in my personal life. I was in so much pain. I was so disappointed in myself. I turned to drugs and alcohol to numb the pain. And that became my life, drugs and alcohol, for the next 10 years.
Now, how did sports, if at all, bring you out of that rut? Because you talked about earlier how sports, in a sense, when you look at it, it can mean so much things. It teach kids teamwork. It develops so many different things. It's not actually like what's actually happening on the court, or on the field. So did sports or did basketball help you to, you know, obviously because you're back in the mix, but was that a key factor in how much of a role or impact did sports play in your bounce back?
Yeah. I mean, before sports play a role, I got to, you know, give a shout out to my family and, you know, the people that really have my back, because without them, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But
for sure,
sports does play a role, because even when I'm at the height of my addiction or my alcoholism, I could turn on sports and I could get away from all of that. That's that, you know, the stuff I'm fighting in my head, because when I'm at the height of addiction and alcoholism, nobody can beat me up more than I can beat myself up in my mind. So when I put on a game and I could just focus on the game of basketball or focus even on a football game, whatever, it really takes me out of that. And I can just focus on that. So that, even that special bond I had with it, knowing that it was my safe place, like at that time, so bad time of my life, that was special, man. And it still is special to this day, because I still get that feeling that, you know, now I got different problems. Now, you know, I just celebrated 5 years clean, so I got different
congratulations
issues.
Congratulations, bro.
Thank you. That's last Friday, so it's five years in a week. So, I think that bond, I appreciate you. That bond with sports will always be there. It's meant a lot to me and my family. It's meant a lot to me in my life, especially basketball, a lot to me and my brother. So.
Now, you talked about your dad, you know, studying game tapes when you guys early on being taught by him, watching film, things of that nature. How much of an impact do you think your dad being a student of the game had with you, you know, being more of a journalist or coming into your own of being a content creator?
I think my dad has had my back throughout everything that went on with me. So he always pushed me to do what I wanted to do with my life. He always said, you know, if you don't want to do this, if you commit to something, you better do it. And I'm going to make sure you see through it. But, you know, if you don't want to commit to it, I'm not going to be disappointed in you. I'm going to push you towards what you want. So when I was that young, I always wanted in the back of my mind to do something with sports, but I wasn't pursuing it at that time.
Okay.
That's something that came on just 4 years ago, is the journalism.
What's the story behind that? Kind of give us a breakdown, if you will, on how things kind of generated, because of course you got so many platforms and, you know, so many people that talk their shit when it comes to sports, barbershop talk, what have you, but how did everything really kind of transition and get into play with you doing it on a more organized professional structure level? How did that come?
So, I think about 5 years ago, I moved to Alberta, Canada, to be with a woman, and I ended up marrying her. We're married 4 years now, and we've got three beautiful kids.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, when I moved up here, you know, I had my struggles and my issues, but, I got clean, and then COVID hit right in 2020, 3 years ago, COVID hit. And me being in my head, I needed something to do with my time. I need, you know, 'cause I wasn't working or nothing like that. So I started a blog on just a simple WordPress, no pictures, just simple blog.
Really?
And one of the first articles I wrote ever was about Jorge Masvidal, the UFC fighter.
Yes.
And I just wrote a random article about him, and I put it on Twitter, and he retweeted it. So right there, I got like 25,000 views on my first article.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was like going nuts. I still got the screenshots of it. I got to show you, because it was on a different account. But yeah, so then that happened. And then my buddy Ryan, and this is the show I used to produce. I'm not producing right now. I'm focusing on the lighting. But My buddy has the Ryan Show FM, which is on like 300 FM radio stations throughout the United States and the world. And he hosts it with Mr. Cheeks from The Lost Boys, the rapper.
Yep. Shout out to them guys. Yep.
And Hampton's Dave. So then they brought me on to be a producer, book guests and stuff like that. And I ended up doing one-on-one interviews. This is all within my first like 6 months. Wow. I did two one-on-one interviews with Allen Houston and Sugar Ray Leonard. And then it was off to the races from there. So, you know why? Because I don't have an issue reaching out to people.
Okay. Like, okay.
I'm not timid. If I get somebody's contact information, if I get their phone number, I'm going to text them. And if I get their email, I'm going to email them. The worst thing that's going to happen, and this is advice I'm giving to everybody who wants to get in this field, the worst thing they do is say no. It's really not that hard.
Thank you for putting that out there, bro, because at the end of the day, you really got to go for yours. You have to generate your own situation, and you can't be scared. So I definitely appreciate you dropping those jewels on the people and the potential content creators. When it comes to anything, you got to just go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to just do it. And trust me, when I began and started writing my blog, there were people laughing at me everywhere. And, you know, it took me a while to get where I am. Like, and there were dark days where it was like, why am I doing this? You know, like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
But you keep pushing through despite those days because you've already come so far. And eventually you get to the point where, you know, I support my family with my job writing about basketball. So.
Dream, man. Dream. That's dope, man. This is the Best of Seven Sports Talk. Seven Mitchell. We got Nick Mack in the building, man. Make sure y'all smash that like button as y'all come into the stream. Subscribe to the channel. So, Nick, let me ask you this, because you're talking about maybe a year or two ago. And of course, video blogs and things of that nature was definitely in rotation. What made you go to the WordPress or the Word type of angle when you did your first article instead of doing like a video blog or something like that?
You know, that's a great question, man, because back then I think I was just naive and I didn't know anything.
Okay.
I didn't even really, when I got this started, when COVID hit, I didn't really have an active Instagram. I didn't have a Twitter. I just put most of my rants on Facebook, and my whole life people were like, yo, take your rants and put them in written form. And I always knew I could write. So I was like, you know what? Let me just start trying doing this, see how much interest I can get. And then, you know, I started writing. I wrote for free for 18 months. I wrote for the Ryan Show website for free just because I wanted to put content out there and practice my craft.
Okay.
And it paid off. So that's another big jewel I could drop on the people is just write.
Okay. Put the work in.
Yeah. And, you know, once Fadeaway World saw my catalog like that, that's when they brought me on.
Talk about a little bit, Nick, the support system that you got from home, because you talked about going to Canada, you said, correct?
Yeah, Alberta,
pandemic,
Canada.
Right, in the pandemic time. And I'm pretty sure, you know, that the lockdown there was just as intense as it was here. How much of the support did, you know, your wife and your household, how big was that for you to actually build the brand that you're building?
My wife and my kids. They've just been tremendous, man. Like they, you know, at first they were like, what, you're going to write? Are you getting paid? Like what's going on? You know, kind of thing. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to write, you know? And they really pushed me through some dark times, and especially my wife. I got to give a shout out to my wife, Tina Marie. She's amazing. She pushed me through some, like I said, those dark times come on you, man. And you want to quit. You just want to literally throw it all away. Like screw my laptop, screw my notes, all this stuff, my microphones, this, that, and the other thing, all that setup you got there. I just want to throw it in the dumpster and forget about it. Those days came for me. I don't want to say they're going to come for you or any other creator, but they came for me. And she got me through those days by saying, you know, you don't give yourself enough credit. You know, like I said, I am my own worst critic. Nobody can beat me up like I can. And she was the voice of reason. Like, look what you have accomplished in such a short time. Keep going. And, you know, holding the mirror up for me really got me through. And it was really tough coming back from the pandemic when everything opened up again.
Right, because the whole new world, right.
And, you know, and here I am trying to still find a writing job to pay the bills.
Right.
And, you know, it was really hard for me to adjust back to that when I had just given the entire pandemic to this world. So she pushed me through that as well and supported me through that as well. So the support system's been 90% of the battle, man.
That's dope, bro. And that's why I brought it up, because a lot of times you hear feel good stories, but there's so many things that's happening behind the scenes when you talk about close family and family and friends, children, wives, husbands that sacrifice so much to help you to get to where you go. I think it should always be highlighted, something that people don't really talk about. So that's fire though. But Nick, let's fast forward a little bit to you, your relationship with Fade Away World. How did that come about with you, you know, collaborating and joining that platform?
So I had been at a crossroads for a few months. I had just lost my brother that we've been talking about.
Rest in peace,
unexpectedly, a couple of months later, I was kind of sitting there and I just happened to like scroll across my buddy Titan, who works for Fade Away World's page. And it said, you know, I just DM'd him, how do you apply and everything. I went on the website. And at this moment, it was like, all right, I'm either going to get a job here or I'm just not going to do this. Because I was just at that place and that time where I had to just start bringing in something to help my family, at least.
It was the fourth quarter for you.
It was the fourth quarter. 10 seconds on the clock, man.
Crunch time. That's facts. Okay.
And like I said, I emailed this, my boss, Nemanja, on a whim. And I included all my work, my interview with Sugar Ray Leonard, all my interviews, everything like that. And that was on a Friday. On a Monday morning, he asked if I could, you know, do a Zoom interview, talk on the computer just like this. And by Wednesday, I was hired.
Wow. Wow. Now, as a sports content creator, journalist, I mean, wearing so many different hats, Nick, is there one particular type of thing that you enjoy doing the most?
It's my writing, man. And I don't really think it's close, to be honest. It's my, like I said, it's that place I go to really, I got a lot of passion and love for the sport of basketball, man. And that's where I go to get it out. And it's really helped me grow. It's helped me grow as a person, grow as a professional. And, you know, I get to do things that a lot of people dream of doing one day. And I don't take that for granted for one second. So that's what I enjoy the most doing is writing.
That's dope. What do you think separates your writing skills from other writers, columnists, things of that nature? Not to say that you're better or worse than anyone, but if you have any potential people that wants to, you know, start checking out your work, what do you think kind of separates yourself from a lot of other people?
Well, here's the thing. I can have my own opinions and introduce those opinions, but while keeping things unbiased.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I'm not here to trash anybody to prove that they're better than, you know, my favorite player. You know, just for reference, one of my favorite players ever is Gary Payton. Like, I know that there's maybe 8 or 9 point guards all time that are better than Gary Payton, but, you know, so I don't have to like trash those players to try to make Gary Payton seem better. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Like I could be fans of, I could keep it down the middle. And that's what I enjoy doing, because I respect all eras of the game. And that's something else that you're going to learn with me, is you're going to learn a lot about the eras that came before what we're just watching today.
Well, you really segue into my next question that I wanted to get in with you, Nick. What's your thoughts and opinions about the old media versus new media? As far as the delivery of how, you know, news is being delivered and things like that, do you see the change, and do you feel like it will be embraced when you don't have so many of the ESPN type of anchorman, you know, delivering sports analysis and info? What do you think about old media versus new?
I think it's a horribly volatile environment today, with sports media. I think that it seems like the hotter the takes, the more disrespectful you are, the bigger the paychecks.
That's a fact.
And I don't ride with that. And I know that's like not, I know it's entertaining. I know people tune in to like get either support those crazy arguments and crazy stances or to fight against them. And that's what drives viewership and that's what drives money. I get all that. But I don't ride with that type of style. But I think you see it on both ends of the spectrum. I mean, even look at the two of the most famous TV analysts in the world are Nick Wright and Skip Bayless, and they're all both horrible and horribly disrespectful on both ends of the GOAT debate. And I don't understand how it went from let's talk about the sport and the game and the numbers and the awards without disrespecting the game of basketball. And I think that's to the level it's at today. And I don't like it because you got more player stands that are willing to disrespect other players and their competition than you got real fans of the game.
And it's the chase of that clout to me that makes it bad, because the negativity, the drama, and all that stuff that you had mentioned, it brings in more dollars, whether we're talking about storylines in the game or just people that's creating content, making shows and things of that nature. But I think it takes away from the actual quality of the sport, because now you see people like Stephen A. Smith and these other personalities who've got rich off of having these types of deliveries. Then you have these other amateur personalities that's coming up in the ranks, and they think that they can copycat that type of vibe and energy, and they think they're going to become an overnight success. And you just lose the total quality in the real analysts and those types of takes. So I think picture-wise, is definitely bad for the sport.
Just yesterday, Russell Westbrook gets traded out of L.A. It's just been a horrible up-and-down tumultuous time for Westbrook in L.A., right?
Yep.
And yesterday, this guy, I don't know how to say his last name, but Dave whatever for ESPN, he says, you know, once you get rid of a vampire and the vampire sucks the life out of a locker room, blah, blah, blah. The dude's already out the door. What are we doing? What are you doing? Like, let him go. He's gone. Everybody finally got what they wanted, and they got a pile on top of this man. Like, it's been for like 2-3 years now. 2 years.
And if he claps back, it's a problem. He's too emotional.
Yeah, it's gotten to a crazy point, man, because I grew up with journalists that would ask the hard-hitting questions and get the hard-hitting answers, but they built a respect between them and the players. When you look at guys like Peter Vesey, he was as controversial as it gets. You know, he made headlines all the time for clashing with players, but he still commands the respect. Like, he doesn't command it, but he just draws the respect of so many, you know?
He stands on business. Vesey's always stood on business. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Gotta respect that. Nick, you brought up the Lakers. I do want to ask you a couple questions before we get up out of here, man.
Let's do it.
I know they won the championship in 2020. Some people can argue that the Lakers really wasn't relevant before LeBron came. But when you look at everything in hindsight, even though the chapter's not over, would you consider the Lakers-LeBron experience a failure?
I can't call it a failure with an NBA championship. I can't do that. You know, I just can't do that. I think since the championship, it's been a failure. If that's fair, since the championship, it's definitely been a failure. But I'll tell you what, man. Last night, I watched that Milwaukee Bucks-Lakers game. Now, one thing I will say is Milwaukee shot themselves out of that game almost very early. I think they shot something like 17% from three in the first half.
That third quarter saved them.
But those dudes were balling for the Lakers. And I'm talking about Rui Hachimura was balling for them. Troy Brown Jr. was balling for them. And they pushed Milwaukee last night, who's got the second best record in the NBA. They pushed Milwaukee last night without D'Lo, without Braun, without Jared Vanderbilt, without Malik Beasley. So I think you got a lot to look out for in the second half of the season. Maybe not second half, because I think there's 27 games left. But you know what I mean. Like, there's something to look out for there. Now, whether they push out of the play-in, I don't think they push past the play-in. I think there's a lot to adjust to with that many roster moves, for sure.
Okay.
So
are you impressed with the new additions that they got yesterday?
I was. I think they were a better team than they were 3 days ago. I do. How much better? I don't know, because the rest of the West got better too. I think Dallas is going to look really good with Luka and Kyrie, and you know I'm a Dallas fan, so I'm just defensively I'm worried.
I was about to set you up for the alley-oop, because I wanted to ask you, I was going to show you this image, and I wanted you to tell me one word that comes to mind when you see this image right here.
Potential. Because I know what they each are individually. I don't know. I just don't know what they are together yet. You know, it's way too early for me to put a thing on that, but the potential, what I am saying that is because it's through the roof, I think. when you got two guys who can finish, who can play make, who can get to the rim, get through the lane, like, you know, Luka and Kyrie can. And Kyrie, he's a great spot up shooter. So I think people forget that too. Like, him playing off Luka is going to be crazy. And I think the rest of that lineup has a lot of work ahead of them. Tim Hardaway Jr., Christian Wood, Dwight Powell, they got a lot.
I was so shocked to see Kyrie go to Dallas. You know, Luka definitely needs help.
You and me both.
Defensively, do you feel like you guys are a suspect?
Yeah, absolutely. I really do. Like, first of all, lack of size. You know, other than Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleber, you got Christian Wood, probably your tallest dude. Like, I don't know.
Right. Got it. Now, yeah, but LeBron broke the all-time scoring record the other night. What's your thoughts on LeBron breaking the all-time scoring record? And is there still an argument or conversation about the greatest of all time in your
opinion? Listen, I've been pretty adamant that I believe Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time. I've been adamant about that my whole life. But let me tell you what LeBron James has accomplished and done over the last 20 years. It's something I've never seen before, man. This dude came in at 18 years old with the expectations of the world on his shoulders. The entire world was watching that first game in Sacramento. I promise, the entire basketball world was watching because they knew this dude was going to be the real deal. And he's been nothing but the real deal since. And if he gets 40, 10, 10, 40,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, 10,000 assists, that's fucking nuts. I'm sorry. Excuse my language, but.
Oh, no. We unfiltered, uninterrupted here.
All right. That's fucking nuts, man. And, it makes the conversation a lot more close for me. I come off really emotional about the Jordan LeBron debate and I get really heated really fast, but I got to say the conversation's close for me, but I still lean Jordan. I probably will never change my mind about that.
Well, I think the conversation is about to get a little bit more heated. I'm going to keep it real with you because I got to talk to the bosses. Wait a minute, Nick. I need to find out from you because you stated that LeBron has done things that you have never seen anyone else do in year 20. I'm trying to figure out what is it about Michael that makes him the GOAT to you?
The height of their careers. You know what I'm saying? Jordan, once he got there in 1991, he never stopped getting there other than when he left, you know, to retire for baseball. He never stopped getting there through 1998, you know? So like, and then there's the moments where I never saw Jordan melt down like LeBron did in 2011. You know, I've never seen a series like that from Jordan in any round. You can say that he got eliminated with without Pippen and all that, but Michael Jordan showed up to play. It's not like it was Jordan who shrunk in the moment. So I do, you know, trust me, I'm on the side of that. It's amazing what LeBron has been able to do with some of the teams he's been on, like the Cavaliers. But Miami should have, you know, they went to four straight. They should have had four, if we're being real.
But he doesn't, I mean, I agree with that. I definitely feel like the Heat should have won more than two rings.
At least three. He doesn't
He doesn't make up for that going to Cleveland, winning the championship, and for that organization, and then L.A.? You think Michael could have did
that? That is insane. It's insane that he has won three championships with three different teams and been the finals MVP in every single finals season. But Michael Jordan did it more. Michael Jordan has two three-peats. Michael, you know, at his peak – different breed, man. 41 points per game in the finals. 41, 6, and 5 in the final. Fuck.
Unreal.
Yeah, you know, unbelievable. Listen, they're both GOATs, in my opinion. Like, I hate the GOAT debate. Let's make it a Mount Rushmore debate because it's Jordan, LeBron, Mount Rushmore. You know, that starts off the Mount Rushmore, and then we could get into the rest about the final two spots. But, I mean, you're picking – this is where the conversation gets disrespectful is when two guys can't have a conversation like you and I are having right now.
Right.
You know, this is where it gets, Jordan played plumbers. LeBron plays in a soft era. Blah, 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 you know, and that's where I don't like the conversations taking the turns. Because you gotta go by what you saw, and then it turns into hypotheticals and made up situations, and it's like, oh, Jordan couldn't beat the Warriors with, you know, LeBron supporting cast in 2017.
And respectfully, you got to actually see the game. I don't even want to debate with people that just watch clips of Jordan. Like, I need to know how old you are, because depending on how old you are, I can know if I can have a conversation with you about this. Because if you were not a fan of basketball in the 90s, you can't really gauge how much of an impact basketball had back then just by the YouTube clips and compilations and stuff.
Yeah, like no. So like, when that 100%. Game went global, when the game went global with the Dream Team.
Yep.
And then for the years after that, that was the beginning of what you're seeing now with the, you know, the international invasion into some of the top players in the NBA. That's the era that inspired them. That Dream Team going over to Barcelona and having the entire, you know, being on the world stage like that, that set things off, man. In a way that I don't know of more significant, you know, impactful moments like that. There are some. I just can't think of any right now, but it's one of the most impactful moments in basketball ever.
Last question I got for you this afternoon, Nick, and I want to know, because you brought this up just now, and it's an important question. You know, not to take anything away from Nikola Jokic, not to take anything away from Giannis or Joel Embiid or Luka Doncic in that matter. Is the NBA pushing an agenda to put the international players at the front of the line by default in order to improve the brand? Because sometimes I feel like, not that these guys are not deserving of the MVPs and the awards, but I feel like because the NBA is trying to improve the brand globally, these guys are being put at the front of the line only to lose these awards.
Yeah, see, I understand that. I really do understand. That's a great question, Seven. And, you know, kudos to you for asking it, man. That's a loaded question, too, because in a lot of ways, in 95% of ways, these guys deserve the recognition they're getting. They're doing things we've never seen before. I mean, Luka earlier this year was a 60-20 triple-double.
That's right.
That was absolutely insane. Nikola Jokic, back-to-back MVPs. He deserved them. Again, he might go for his third in a row. He's averaging a triple-double as a center right now. Giannis, big performance after a slow start to the season, and he fell off. He fell off for a little while there, and now he's been back, man.
He's bouncing back. He's definitely bouncing back.
I think he's probably third in the MVP race in my mind right now.
Yep, right now. Yep.
He might even Embiid's probably second behind Jokic, you know, you got Jason Tatum right there, too. But the only thing hurting Tatum is he's got a 25-point per game scorer right next to him. So yep, none of those other guys got a 25-point per game scorer right next to him. So, I mean, there could be an agenda that was being pushed, but I also think by saying that, we're kind of diminishing what these guys are doing too, because they're killing it right now. Their basketball is beautiful right now. The parity across the entire league is probably perhaps the most beautiful I've ever seen. So
as the environment, I agree, but when I bring that up, this is my problem, and maybe you can help me see things in a whole different lens. But I'm looking at the last four MVPs, respectfully. You talk about Giannis, and then you talk about Nikola Jokic winning two. He about to be the third. And I understand that the MVP is a regular season award. Number one, I got a problem with that. But my problem is I'm watching these guys win these MVPs consecutively and consistently. But then when we get into April, May, and June, these guys don't look valuable at all. They're not even nowhere close to the promised land. I don't think that the year that Giannis won the chip was the first year I think Nikola had won his MVP. I think when Giannis was winning his MVPs, he went in the playoffs playing terrible. Nikola Jokic, I know in the bubble, they did pretty well going to the Western Conference Finals, but I know he was shorthanded with Jamal Murray last year, but I just wasn't impressed with these guys in the postseason showing their real value when these games count the most. I do respect that the award is regular season. And like you said, these guys put in the work, 82 game stretch. I respect it. But to me, to have someone being the MVP of my league for 3 years in a row and can't even get to the final round.
That's why in I'd say in 90% of cases, I find the finals MVP to be more valuable than the MVP when I'm determining what a player means to a team.
Right.
Because that means that player was there through the entire playoff battle and showed up as the big, you know, in the biggest moments on the biggest stage, whether it was on the offensive end or the defensive end. Now, of course, there's outliers to that. Like Andre Iguodala, I would probably say Steph was the most valuable player that year.
Right.
That, you know, so, and he was the MVP of the league that year. So that's where it flips. But that's why I would actually put more emphasis on the finals MVP award than the MVP award because of that pattern. You know, if you could get it done in the playoffs, you mean way more to me than somebody who dominated a regular season.
Cool. All right, people, that is a wrap, man. Sports journalist from Fadeaway World. We had Nick Mack in the building. Nick, I appreciate you so much for joining me, man. Please let the people know where they can follow you at on social media before we sign off.
So it's at MacDaddy NBA, MacDaddyNBA on all platforms. And Talking Smack with Mac on YouTube. I might be getting back into it, but go check out the channel. Let me know what you think on a couple of videos. And, you know, I might give it a shot and have Seven be a guest on my show. What do you think, Seth?
I'm on deck whenever you need me, bro. I definitely, you already know.
All right, yo, Seven, I really appreciate you, you know, taking notice of my work and wanting to have a basketball and life conversation with me, man. One thing I want to leave the people with, whatever it is, especially if it's sports journalism, go for it. Fuck it. Go for it, man. And like commit to it. It's 3 years. Give yourself 3 years to get to where I've gotten because that's what it's taken me. And I promise you could get there too. Just put your all into it. You got this.
I appreciate the gems, bro. Definitely salute to the day ones of the NBA community, man. This is Seven Mitchell with the Best of Seven Sports Talk. Appreciate you guys. Shout out again to everyone that joined the live stream. Big up to my brothers, Anthony, K-Doz. I see y'all. Big up to you fellas. Make sure y'all smash that like button again. Subscribe to the channel if you're new. Become a member of the Best of Seven Sports Talk. Join the membership now. And, of course, follow me on all social media platforms. I appreciate you guys' support. I hope you guys stay safe. Have a happy weekend. And I catch you guys on Monday. We are out. Peace. All right, man. I want to thank you guys for listening into another episode of the Best of Seven Sports Talk. I'm Seven Mitchell, man. Make sure you follow the show to be sure to be notified about the next episode. Also, I'll put the Linktree link in the description so you can follow us on social media as well as donate and contribute to our platform. See you guys again on the next episode. Peace.